Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon. It's everybody's favorite part of the podcast when I say that. Sorry, I was away. On a little vacation in Italy. Had a little bit of fun. Had some important moments in my life happen. But enough about that. You're here for golf. I understand that. It's Oakmont week, in my opinion. I'm sorry. I know that we've got a golf tournament this week. No offense to the FedEx and all that good stuff. But I'm a Fox guy. Sectional show earlier this week in LA with Holly Saunders and Brad Faxon. Had a ton of fun doing that, preparing this field, getting it polished and ready to go. And the mind's on Oakmont. The mind's on the U.S. Open. We are here. Second major championship of the year. Our big enchilada here at Fox. We are really, really excited. Make sure you tune in next week for sure. Had a chance to talk to Paul Azinger this week. He's an animal. Let's just be honest. The guy is not only one of the more entertaining people that I've met in golf, but one of the more unique individuals. He is insightful. He's intelligent. He's funny. We chatted for a long, long time, and I hope you enjoy it. Obviously, we hit on Oakmont. We hit on some of these young players. We hit on what Tiger and Phil Mickelson like to eat for breakfast. And Phil's breakfast sounds like something you'd see in a remake of Groundhog Day. That's how hearty it looks. I enjoyed talking to Paul. Obviously excited about him joining the Fox team, a big part of next week. We're ready for Oakmont. We're prepared. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff for you next week. I'm going to have a lot of fun stuff on the site. Make sure you go to foxsports.com/golf. I've got a big mailbag coming out next week. I've got a really fun project I've been working on for the last few weeks that focuses on the golf course logos. So if you're into being a super big golf nerd, as I am, that's something you might be interested in. I wrote a piece the day after I played Oakmont that's going to go next week as well, just basically talking about the challenges that is the golf course. The people always talk about how hard it is, but nobody really explains what that means, and I tried to put it into words. Hopefully you'll enjoy that. Hit on the three toughest shots at Oakmont, which really it's impossible to narrow those down. They're all impossible, but there's some fun stuff coming out. So make sure you go to foxsports.com next week. As of now, let's get into it. Paul Azinger, major champion, Ryder Cup captain, and now Fox Sports analyst. And we welcome into the clubhouse Paul Azinger, 12-time PGA Tour winner, major winner, Ryder Cup winning captain, and now a member of the Fox broadcasting team. You heard him at Wingfoot. You're going to hear him at Oakmont. First of all, I wanted to say congratulations. I think I speak for everybody when I say excited to have you on the team. Was excited at Wingfoot and really fired up to get to Oakmont. I mean, this is the big enchilada. This is the thing we're really excited about. And I know you're pumped up as well.
I am pumped up. And I think we're all kind of just happy to have each other and trying to do a U.S. Open as if we were sitting in, you know, our living room or in the locker room or in the men's grill or something, you know, with minus a couple of F-bombs or whatever might occur along the way. But this is going to be a relaxed group. While we haven't done a lot of TV, I think that, of course, Buck's done tons of TV. Buck's a good player, by the way. I don't think people realize how good he is. I remember when Tirico first started in TV, you know, he had to learn. And Buck is well on his way, so I'm really excited about Joe. And the rest of us, we've lived careers on the PGA Tour, and we have all that experience behind us. And now we just try to articulate. I guess the way I've been saying it lately, Shane, is that we just want to let the picture be descriptive, and we try to be informative. More just, I want to be into kind of how the players think and what this golf course looks like. We're so lucky to be at Oakmont, and I can't wait. I just can't wait to do it.
Well, I ask everybody that played the game, my first question I like to ask is, it's a really big golf question, so I hope you're ready for it. What have you had to eat today? And you got to be descriptive. If you had a cheeseburger that was greasy, you've got to tell us. If you had something healthy, that's okay too. But I don't want you shortchanging us on what you've had.
Shoot, man, I don't even remember what I ate today. Let's see. I had the sweetest, most delicious cantaloupe this morning. If this is cantaloupe season, so if you can get one of those, if you like cantaloupe, my goodness.
Cantaloupe season.
I know. I went to Boston. My wife went to Boston Market and brought me back for lunch a chicken bowl with mashed potatoes and corn. That was delicious. And I have since had a bowl of black bean soup and a few peanuts. That's about it.
That's a fairly healthy day. I'm pretty impressed. I mean, you got to get ready. As we said, we're getting close to the U.S. Open. I like that you're packing on the energy.
I'm trying. That's my normal, though. You know, I was thinking about nervous, you know, how nerves work in golf, and I wasn't a big eater when I played and I got myself in contention. And it's funny. I almost want to say this on air, and maybe I will, but it just hit me like a ton of bricks. The nerves and the anxiety before you play can affect your taste buds, because, like, food didn't taste good if I had a chance to win a tournament. And if it can affect your taste buds, what do you think it's doing to the rest of you?
Absolutely. So now, I mean, you see these guys. I mean, Tiger was big on this, but you see, like, Rory and Spieth and these guys powering down sandwiches, bananas, all that stuff throughout. Almonds are a big thing on tour. You didn't have any food for four and a half, 5 hours?
I would nibble around once I got on the course. I could eat a little bit, but prior to getting on the course, I couldn't. Nothing tasted decent to me, and I just avoided it. But now some players, they ate like pigs before they teed off. And so I almost wonder if somebody like Phil, who can wolf down 3 waffles and a couple of fried eggs on top and syrup and butter and all that. I saw him do that at Ryder Cup on Sunday once.
Two waffles.
No, 3. And it's those big Euro waffles with the line in the middle. And big bricks. They're perfect rectangles. And he ate 3. I was eating 1 cornflake at a time out of my bowl with no milk because I was so nervous. And Mickelson was eating that. And I just figure he just gotten over the nerve part of it because his taste buds are still functioning really well. Hey, how about this? After he ate all those, he put 2 fried eggs on there and just started cutting it all up. And he ordered a Diet Coke. I said, bro, you might as well just get the real thing.
Yeah, go to the full 140 calories, baby. That Diet Coke isn't going to do anything to that meal. That almost seems a little bit like the Phil Mickelson, John Candy Montana moment where everybody's so nervous in the huddle at the Super Bowl and Phil's like, no big deal. I'm going to take this down Bill Murray style. You know, I mean, no reason to hold back now.
I know, man. But he wasn't the only one. Now, I watched Tiger. He could just crush egg white omelets like nobody's business. If a guy brought him out an egg white omelet and it was one of those little, you know, 2 eggers, I promise you he'd eat 2 or 3 of those suckers before he'd go out. And I think, of course, Tiger got past that point where he didn't deal with that emotional anxiety roller coaster like, let's say, Jason Day does, for example. Jason Day, he comes into TPC the number one ranked player. He comes in the pre-tournament favorite. He just won Bay Hill. He just won his previous event, and he has a 4-shot lead going to Sunday, and Sunday morning, all the way up until he teed off, he said he was the most nervous he'd ever been in his life. So how many times – see, I just think his taste buds had to be ruined that day. I can't wait to ask him if he can eat when he's that nervous, because that'll be an interesting question to see if nerves affect everyone's taste buds or just mine.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it affects people because, you know, you see people that are flying that are nervous when they get in airplanes. You know, they're not eating that meal they get served. I mean, they might pick around at it, but it's not like they're taking down the full chicken or pasta dish that Delta's serving them. I mean, you know, this is something I think that maybe affects everybody. So, you know, like you said, maybe Jason Day.
But golf is 10 times scarier than flying, dude. You can stick it on autopilot when you're flying. If you're playing golf, the thing is, Jason Day, here's the thing. This is what I think. I think that Jason Day knows there's no sure thing because he's lost before. But I think like Nicklaus and Tiger, I don't think they ever lost enough. Well, I shouldn't say that. Jack finished second 19 times. But you know what I mean. They got it done so much that I think they got past that point of caring as much about there's no guarantee. Where, like, Jason Day, I think he still cares. You know what I mean? I'm trying to say one guy gets in contention so often that maybe his taste buds are just no big deal. So I got in contention enough in 93 that I could eat pretty decent.
You could take some food down before the events, finally. Once you finally got comfortable after the full year.
I know. See, I don't know why I went off on this tangent on you, but it is interesting, though. You know, but to think about Jason Day, too, because he's the number one player in the world right now. And then the number two player in the world, Jordan Spieth. Think about this guy's the best putter on earth, and he can't even look at his ball on a 2.5-footer. So you tell me. But Jason Day, to be that confident and to be the guy, but to still deal with that, you know, he and plus the way he talks, sometimes you get the impression that he's not so sure or optimistic about his longevity, maybe. He's already talking about the Hall of Fame and all this stuff. He's only like 27 or 8, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to turn 30 somewhat soon, and I mean, he finally broke through at the major. You mentioned Spieth. I think Rory with the cross hand and going back and forth. Do you feel like these young guys now tinker more than they should? I mean, do you think they should just stick with what's kind of got them there?
Absolutely not. We always did it, but now everyone is like on a microscope. You cannot even imagine how many times we changed putters and grips and stances and all this stuff. But nobody cared. Right. Nobody saw it. Nobody knew. You know how many putters? These great players, a lot of really good players, traveled with a lot of different putters, you know, and wedges. And I just think that you would do anything, you know, you could within the rules of the game to try to improve your game. And for Rory to go from conventional to cross-handed back to conventional, he's just scrapping and clawing for a way. And it doesn't concern me. It just shows me that he's like – all of us, you know, he's always in that pursuit to find something that he thinks is a little better. Maybe that cross-handed helped him because it squared his shoulders or something, and now he's going to putt conventional with his shoulder square. I think about the right hand and the left hand and, you know, left hand low, however you do it. If I threw a ball at you, Shane, and it was coming dead at you and your hands were by your side and it was coming right at your chest, right at your sternum or your face, wherever, would you, like, you're right-handed, right? You catch with your left, throw with your right.
I'm left-handed, yeah, so catch with my right, throw with my left.
Oh, is that how? Okay, so would you grab it, would you catch it with your right, or would you catch it with your left?
I think I'd catch it with my left. I'm thinking about it right now.
I mean, it's a weird thing to think about, but so I got this friend, Uncle Sweet Pea, and he tells me, he's right-handed, catches with his left, throws with his right. And I asked him that question one time, and he says, the left hand's defense, the right hand's offense. And I laughed, and I thought, that's pretty funny. But it's kind of true. So, and I think about putting the same way. I mean, I'm a right-handed putter. I unload with my right hand. You start switching that left hand low and all that stuff, it is trickier. But it's the quest for what you think could be better. And that's what Rory's going through. And it doesn't make me worried about him. It just makes me realize he's human too, and he's on this quest too, just like we all are. We all did it. Go ask Curtis about that, or... You know, there's very few guys that use the same club all the time.
Even though Faxon loves carrying that putter around all the time, that same Scotty Cameron he's had for decades and decades.
Yeah, but I guarantee you that left hand is defense, that right hand is offense. That left hand's control, that right hand's offense with a guy like Faxon. The right hand never has betrayed Faxon.
Right.
You know, it hasn't betrayed me. My right hand hasn't betrayed me when it comes to that putting. I don't think it's, you know, some guys it'll let you down.
Right.
And so... You can't play offense anymore, and you putt with using more of that defensive feeling. You know, it's amazing. Uncle Sweet Pea's a wise bugger.
We might need to get Uncle Sweet Pea on the broadcast. He sounds like he might be perfect
for TV. Hey, I'm telling you.
you had a career year in '93. Would you say it was your best year?
Yeah. I mean, I had a 10-month stretch that was good because I won the Tour Championship in '92. And I had 11 top threes in 10 months and with four wins. And, you know, but that's all minimized when you get a guy like Tiger and Vijay winning 9 times in a year. I'm like, oh, well, I had 11 top threes in 10 months. Who cares?
Yeah,
bro?
But still, I mean,
they won 9 times.
Impressive nonetheless. When you talk about Rory searching, you say Rory's searching for greatness and he's trying to find this or that. Do you feel like when you were at your best, when you were clicking, when things were great for you in your game, was it just something small that made sense to you when you were playing? I mean, something that just kind of tweaked and clicked, and in your mind it made sense and you were able to go out there and play?
Well, I think that for me and for most players, I think that feel trumps thought, but feel creates thought. And golf is like it's a different game, right? So you have to swing a correct way. Golf's like two turns and a swish. It's not turn, swish, turn. It's turn, turn, and then the club comes in, it's swish. And when you have that sequence down, if you're physically smart, you can probably do it. And you can get your divot on the right side of the ball, you can hit a hook. And once you can hit a hook, you can start to play decent golf. Well, then if you overhook, you got to learn the anti-swing. But it's all feel. What, you know, thoughts change. What a guy thinks doesn't necessarily transfer from Nicholas to Trevino to Watson to Weisskopf to me to you. How the guys think, though, makes the difference. Okay, so Jordan Spieth and all these guys, they've all learned how to think. What they think is always different. But I think that what they feel transfers into thought. And so we all feel differently. You know, I'm not trying to go psycho on you, but
right.
I always felt like if you had a better record than me, you must have had better feel than me, because I could remember my swing thoughts. I could remember the sequence of order. But sometimes you just don't have as good a feel.
Yeah.
And maybe your nerves are affecting you, and your putting's not as, your speed's not as good or whatever. It's a psychological battle too. But I always felt like that I was rarely out prepared or out concentrated, that if you were better than me, you had better feel than me. And so when I went on that run, I can remember, you know, I would lay in bed at night and I could tell the next day I was going to have it. So that was weird. And then I keep thinking, man, if I feel this, what must Nicholas have felt? You know, that's what I'm saying.
No,
I
think it's amazing.
Concentration is all great and everything, but I think there's a bar there. You have to have the ability to swing with a measure of certainty through the hit. It's really face and path awareness at our level, at the highest level. And then it's the ability to control your distance. And so you got to have feel. You know, does the swing make the shot, or does the shot make the swing? That's like the right hand or the left hand, you're going to catch the ball.
Right.
I don't know. Does the shot make the swing, or does the swing make the shot? I think there's an answer. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, to me, it's the swing makes the shot. That's what my brain would think makes sense there, but I'm assuming there's people that probably think the whole way.
Right. It's like a word circle, though, because I think the shot makes the swing, because you have to hit the shot the right distance. So you have to make the swing at a certain speed, and there's all these different speeds and blah, 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 blah. Are you with me?
Yeah, I understand.
So, I don't know. The guy that has the best feel, the most face and path awareness, he's the man. He's the man. We all got the sequence. You're physically smart. I've seen it. You can repeat that for the most part. But, man, the guy with the best feel, watch out, especially if he can converge the mind. You know, so if you get the convergence of the artist and the engineer, forget about it.
And you speak of people that are getting it, people that are clicking. We're up on Oakmont. I mean, we're finally here to the U.S. Open. Is Oakmont a golf course that fits a certain type of player, or is it just a golf course that it's just going to be the guy who's gaming it that week?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, there's probably, everybody's going to say there's probably 10 or 20 guys that can win the tournament, and that's it maybe. But there's might be a few more than that. There's some people you know aren't going to be able to do it. I think you know they're not going to be able to do it because of the nerve part of it, the pressure part of it, what they're used to, where their comfort zone is. You can say they're out. And then you have the journeyman thinker or whatever, but I don't know that any U.S. Open course favors anybody. Sometimes it's bombers that win. They can back off and hit irons in the fairways. And then there's times when the guy who drives it dead straight wins. But in the end, they all have to putt. And Oakmont's greens are going to tell the story, buddy. They're the fastest greens in the world. And the players are going to be tested. You can't necessarily control where your ball is going to stop at Oakmont. They're fast, and you'll have grades in the greens, but then little, you know, movement within the grades, and it's just tough. It's just hard to putt well, and they're super, super fast, the fastest the players will see all year, I guess. And then you have to have the nerve to do it. I like Jordan Spieth the most. I feel like that after the Masters, that his victory at Colonial, did he win? Yeah, was unbelievable, especially because he missed the cut after the Masters at TPC. And then he led Dallas in his hometown and slipped on Sunday, then came right back. And, you know, now the whole line of questioning for Jordan Spieth is going to be different.
It's
Dustin
interesting.
Dustin Johnson had a chance to win Memorial. Man, can you imagine how different the questions would be for Dustin Johnson had he won Memorial last week?
It's interesting with Oakmont in particular. You know, you mentioned Jordan Spieth, and I don't want to venture and say that Jordan Spieth is this next generation's kind of face of, but I mean, I think he's obviously in one of two or three people with Jason Day and Rory. Do you look back at 2007 with Tiger Would you say that's probably the most disappointing major that he didn't win, considering it was at Oakmont, a golf course that we've seen so many legends win at? You know, I mean, he was so close there. He hit the ball so well all week. And to not be able to close that out and add his list to the names that have won at Oakmont, do you think when he looks back on his career, that'll be the one that really hits him the most?
Well, yeah. Now that you mention it, it probably will be. It probably will be. Tiger, he's not, he doesn't have a whole bunch of seconds like Jack. Jack has 18 majors and 19 seconds, and I think he has 23 thirds or something crazy. I may be wrong about that. When you're wrong about numbers, just saying with authority, nobody will know.
I like that. That's a good broadcasting tip. I'm in on that.
Well,
I'm
now
write
you
that
got
down.
That internet's just crushing my bad facts. But he has a bunch of thirds as well. Tiger doesn't have that many. So the few, you know, when he has a few seconds like that, that one might linger. You're right. I don't know that he gives it a whole lot of thought at this point. His life's turned in a lot of different directions, and now he's got that, you know, that nerve issue. He's probably not overly upset about 07. But we can be. We can be upset about it.
Yeah, you think about that. I mean, I was thinking about that watching. And honestly, I mean, when I watched 07, you know, when you think back, like for somebody like me, I mean, in 2007, I was a year out of college. You know, I don't remember what happened. I mean, I know who won, and I know who was around. But, you know, I don't remember that Furyk hit it, you know, hit it a bad tee shot on 2 or a bad tee shot on 17 trying to go for those greens. And I surely right. didn't remember how good Tiger Woods hit the ball all week. I mean, he probably hit it as good as he's hit it at any event outside of Pebble Beach. And to not be able to finish that off, that's what's so interesting. And, I mean, I wonder if these young players know or even care about the history. You know, do they care that it's Hogan and Jack and all these great players that have been able to do it? Do you think they look at this event and say, I want to add my name to this U.S. Open, much like they do when you get to St. Andrews in a British?
Well, the guys that are legacy building think that way. I'll guarantee you that. There's going to be some guys trying to legacy build coming into this U.S. Open. Spieth is one of them. Jason Day's already, he's talking about the Hall of Fame at TPC because he doesn't know about his longevity. And you know Rory's legacy building. So, you know, Dustin Johnson wants to break the spell that seems to have a little bit of a hold on him. And he can really change the way he's perceived if he were to pull it off. But you got to pull it off. Then you got Mickelson, who's finished second 6 times at a U.S. Open. Good God, but he's got to try to pull one off. That'll make the difference, not the 6 seconds.
Right.
It's hard to do. But I think they love the game and the history of the game, those guys. I think especially the legacy builders. The other guy, you know, let's say Charlie Hoffman, he's won 3 or 4 tournaments playing his tail off. Easily could be the guy to win a U.S. Open. But I don't think he's all wrapped up in the history of Oakmont like, you know, like some of these other guys might be.
Yeah, when they know winning Oakmont is huge, right? I mean, you win, this is the, I would say this is the USGA home for this event above all other ones. I mean, I think you could throw Wingfoot in there or Pebble as well. But, you know, getting out there and seeing how this golf course will be presented, I think has been pretty cool to be a part of, because you do feel like you're a little bit of a piece of history in golf, because it's Oakmont U.S. Open, and I think that's the prize jewel of this championship.
Yeah, I agree. It's the home away from home for the United States Golf Association. It's going to be the 9th U.S. Open there and all that, and you know, it's a beautiful contrast of green grass and white sand, real, sure enough, traditional-looking U.S. Open. And if you think about how young, you know, these guys are, McIlroy and Spieth and some of the contenders, they haven't seen a lot of real traditional-looking U.S. Opens. Marion was a little, it wasn't, you know, it's a traditional U.S. Open, but it's a different course. It's a different kind of course. I don't know how to describe that, but, you know, last year, didn't look anything like a U.S. Open. Pinehurst, the way they set that course up, didn't look anything like a U.S. Open. This looks like our U.S. Open.
Right.
The ones that scared the tar out of me before I teed off one of the years I thought I could win. God, they were scary. Because, you know, golf's your life, and you read what people are saying and writing, and if you're the pre-tournament favorite or if you're one of the guys, then you look down that fairway and it's like, how am I going to get this ball in that fairway?
Is there a more intimidating?
It's claustrophobic out there.
Is there a more intimidating opening tee shot than Oakmont's first hole, do you think?
There could be, but For a lot of people, there may be a lot more difficult tee shots, but it's going to be their first U.S. Open or the first time they've played at Oakmont. It may not be the scariest looking, but it'll probably be the hardest they ever hit.
That's right. It's not scary looking. You don't look down the fairway thinking it's impossible. I almost feel like if you never played it, you'd probably hit driver down there down the right side, and you'd hit your 8-iron on the green and make your par. I feel like it's almost a little bit like 13 at Augusta, where history almost makes that hole tougher than it is, because you know Masters have been lost short, or if you hit it long, you've got a really hard up and down. I mean, I almost feel like the historical side of things makes some of these shots almost tougher than they maybe really are if the guy was just out playing 18 with his buddies.
They're way tougher. At the Masters, they're way tougher, because you know about the Masters at the start till the back nine, the last nine holes. And, yeah, you know that. And nobody goes into the Masters naive. They all watched it when they were little kids. Everybody knows what's happened on every hole there. And Oakmont's not quite like that, but I can tell you, Oakmont is terrifying. It'd be like, you know, if, let's say, what course would you like to play the most, Shane, that you've never played in your life?
I mean, I would say Augusta National or Cypress Point.
Okay, that's cool. So what if you had, like I said, I'll give you five of them. And then you get drawn out of a hat, and you get to go play them. And you get to play with your three favorite pros. Well, you get there to the first tee, and, you know, somebody flips you a ball and says, you can only play until you lose that ball, and you got to go in. And I'm telling you, bro, that's how you feel at Oakmont. Like you're playing with your last ball.
Last golf ball you're ever going to play with.
Yeah, but if you're on, you can get Oakmont. It can be had, but you've got to click on all cylinders. There's no fluking around this place because of the severity. Every shot is going to require a real amount of integrity. You could skank a tee shot in a fairway, but if you thin the iron or skank it just a little bit, and there's not any integrity on it, it's likely not going to stay on the green. You can't really, your greens are so fast, you can't necessarily control, you know, where it's going to end up. I always hear these. I asked Nicholas this the other day. We talked about Oakmont a little bit, and I said, Jack, you know, I always hear these announcers say you got to keep the ball below the hole, but I got to be honest with you, Jack. I think I might have screwed up my whole career because I never thought about that. I never once thought about keeping it below the hole. I just thought about getting it as close as I could. Jack said, relax. He said, I never thought about keeping it below the hole because I didn't mind a downhill putt.
Interesting.
And, you know, to me, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's the best ever.
Yes, I didn't screw up. Jack just had a lot better feel than me.
He and I had the same thought. His execution a bit better, especially in some of these majors.
But see, Oakmont, you know, you gotta make great contact, or the ball's just not gonna stay, you know, nicely on the green. And then the bunker shots, there's got to be a load of integrity on your little bunker shots. And the great thing is, we all get to watch because the hottest players are going to be hitting shots right on the button, and we all get to watch.
Is it true that you used to drive a used motorhome around when you were on tour?
Yeah, I lived in a 24-foot. It was called a Vogue mini motorhome. It had the cab and the top on, you know, you could sit up or sleep up top above where you drove. And it was great. Had a cat, a little hibachi grill, smoking hot little wife, and off we went. Played the tour. is this cable?
is this one of the, I mean, what's, how different, do the players these days even understand how different their lives are compared to, you know, I mean, I read you were in the top 10 in the world something like 300 weeks in your career between like 88 and 94. I mean, do these guys even understand what tour life used to be like before Tiger in 97 and the money boom and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's still a grind and it's grueling, but you know, the way you get there is a lot easier. I can say that. Most of them are on that private plane. And I did the private plane even towards the tail end of my career just because I felt like it was an intangible. And you can never really justify the cost or anything like that, but it is an intangible, and I thought it could help me play better too. So I did that, but it is different. I loved being in the motorhome. I've seen America in that motorhome, and we saw so many things, and I'm happy we had that life. It's kind of romantic about it because I kind of still want to buy a motorhome, but it ain't happening. Getting room service.
Yeah, that
room
one's service. Done. You're flying first class there and getting yeah. something good to eat. There's no hibachi grill going anymore.
No, but that grill was good.
It lasted a while. If you don't mind, I wanted to ask, and I know you have to talk about this a lot, but I just wanted to bring up 08 Ryder Cup for a minute, if you don't mind.
No.
How much prep did you put into the Ryder Cup captaincy before you got to Valhalla? Before Ryder Cup week, how much time did you prep for that, total in your guesstimation?
Golf becomes our life, right? So, golf is all I ever think about or thought about. I just, even if I was at the movies, if I was out to dinner, I was trying to feel, grip my fork or my knife. It was just terrible. And it obsesses you. And so Ryder Cup's no different. It's just golf. But you can't, you can only control the controllables to do a Ryder Cup. But it totally consumes you. And I watch every tournament wondering what it's going to be like if he's on the team or if that guy's on the team. And then eventually it gets down to where it's crunch time and players start making it. And, the philosophy that we took into our Ryder Cup, my Ryder Cup was more, how to create the best environment. Is really the thing, and then it was really about taking the large group and making them into small groups. And so as I was observing the players through their personality types, because I had help trying to figure out who the players were and learning their personality types, and then creating green light, caution light, red light scenarios, and trying to get green light players together. So it consumed my thoughts constantly. Like when I saw a player play well, I wanted to know, just through observation, nobody filled anything out, just through observation, wanted to see kind of what they were like. And I learned different personality types, I won't get into it, but we started to categorize the players. So, yeah, I was consumed by it. And as it turned out, it was different for the guys that were on, we lost four of the previous five. And if nothing else, some of the veterans like Mickelson and Furyk and those guys got really, went from, oh, no, not another Ryder Cup to, whoa, this is weird. This is different. I kind of like this. They knew everything. By putting them into the small groups, these guys bonded together. And then the idea to let them pick who filled out their three-man teams, because I got the extra picks, that was that's what sealed the deal for the groups of the four-man groups. They bonded with each other, knowing I would never take them out of their group unless there was an injury or an illness or something. You were the group. They decided in their four-man group who would play alternate shot or best ball.
Interesting.
They were invested in each other. They were all invested in each other. I called Mickelson, Anthony Kim, and Justin Leonard, and I said, I see six players who are playing well enough that they would be green-light personalities that you can choose from. If you choose outside the six names I give you, I'll explain to you why you're wrong. But just choose from these six guys. And so Anthony Kim, Justin Leonard, and Phil Mickelson got together. They called me back in about an hour and said they wanted Hunter Mahan. I said, I'll give you Hunter Mahan. I call Hunter Mahan, explain the whole thing. And I said, oh, they chose you. You're on the team. He was so sold out for those three guys, I can't even tell you, bro. And they bonded, and there was no stopping them. And as even with all that, it was still nip and tuck right there at the end. So we won 16.5 to 11.5, but it felt closer. But those guys did sell out. And so as the captain, I just messaged them, that's the Bob Rotella, play to play great. And then Tom Lehman, play aggressive. And me, let's go show off. Let's go show off for the crowd. And that was the theme. And we just prepared. And I created an environment, and I got the heck out of the way and watched them do it. And they did it. They played great.
Yeah.
But I did create the environment, but I obsessed it. I still think about it all the time. How did that even happen?
I'll tell you, it was a great week as an American golf fan. You obviously got to spend a lot of time with Anthony Kim, who isn't playing pro golf anymore. But what was not only his game like, but what was he like? I mean, obviously a fiery competitor, but the guy had a ton of talent.
He did, and I don't know if he still does. I don't know. I've lost touch with him. I just don't have any contact with Anthony Kim. Last time I saw him, we were doing an outing together somewhere, and it was in Canada, and he wasn't able to play because of his hand. But he seemed really happy, and he couldn't wait to get back and all that. He turned out at age 21 to be our team leader. There were just no two ways around it. He just got everybody jacked. For him, it was a little bit like a street brawl. And he's a street kid. So he grew up on the streets of L.A. Unbelievable basketball player. He's an athlete. But I don't know where he is. I wish I did. I feel like, wow, what happened to Anthony Kim? This guy's so good.
Right.
But it happens sometimes. You know, some guys quit because they just, golf is simple. It's not complicated, but it's not easy. Golf is simple, but it's not easy. And to go play at that high level and to be scrutinized and all that, and especially now with Twitter and 24-hour golf channel, I think it's harder to be, you know, you got to want to be a brand builder.
Right.
If you want to play great golf today, you got to want to build your brand. It's hard to play great and not build your brand. Like you told me that you were talking to Aaron Oberholzer today, and he just made the comment, you got to know who wants the ball. Well, the guy that wants the ball wants to build his brand in all likelihood.
Yeah, I mean, and that's your business. I mean, your business, like you said, it's 24/7. I mean, it could burn you out quick as day. I mean, it really could if you're not paying a lot of attention, because I just feel like you've got to be on all the time. The moment you're not is the moment the video comes out or somebody says this guy's a jerk.
And then you mix in a couple of injuries, and then somebody like AK, who's kind of crazy, you know, he's injured a little bit. He's got insurance on himself. That's the rumor. And, you know, next thing you know, you kind of say, I totally get it. I understand that. But it's a shame we didn't get to watch Anthony Kim show off for a few more years. The injuries, gosh, man, you just never know. You just never know when you get taken out by a root or 7-inch rough.
That's right. I mean, anything's lurking. You know, that's the problem with it. You know, with that captaincy of the Ryder Cup, and then, of course, your major victory, and I know it's probably hard to compare, but is there one that you got more joy out of? I mean, was it the Ryder Cup, or was it your own personal ability to close out a PGA championship?
I'm glad I got both, I can tell you that. The PGA, I think, personally, if I wouldn't have ever won a major, I would have been mortified, you know, really, really disappointed about that. I'm so glad I did it. I had several chances before I did it, and but the Ryder Cup was unbelievable, man. I mean, in the end, it's the Ryder Cup. I'm glad the PGA happened. But, gosh, the Ryder Cup tops it by a mile. To be able to go out there and be asked to try to lead those 12 guys, I didn't know that I had that in me, honestly. It changed me forever. And it changed who I am, how I communicate, everything. It changed everything. Dr. Ron Braun that came in there with me and helped me. See, my idea was to kind of steal from the Navy SEALs who took 20 guys and break them into four pods of five guys or whatever, five pods of four, whatever they do. But I kind of borrowed that from them. And then my friend, Dr. Ron Braun, asked me, how would you put them together in their small groups? And I just thought, well, I haven't even thought about that. But, you know, like games, I guess, is how we usually do it. Games that complement. He said, have you ever considered like personality types? And I'd never heard that. You know, I'd heard that in the business, but I'd never considered it. And I called him about two or three months later. And I said, you know, I'm really curious. And we talked some more. I asked Olin Brown to be one of my assistants because of his relationship with Tiger mainly. And, of course, Tiger didn't play on our team, but Olin Brown and I together got with Ron Braun, and we decided that we were going to use like personalities, that we were going to use that whole Myers-Briggs, the DISC, green light, caution light, red light personality traits. Because Ron sold us on the idea that like personalities in pressure situations, they process information the same, and that would be better in a pressure situation. That's the way we went with it. So it's not just putting four-man teams together for us. It goes deeper than that. It's not just a pod system. It was about green lights. Like guys that organize their sock drawer by color, mm-hmm. They play together. They think the same when they're freaking out.
Type A guys that love to be like that. I feel like you're so passionate about it. I mean, would you do it again? I mean, would you want to get it back and run it back again or not really?
No, God, no. I mean, it's a terrible feeling to give up total control, and then all, you know, if you don't win, then you're demonized as some horrible person. I'm over that. I think I wouldn't rule it out completely if they were to lose, which I don't think they will here in 2016, for 2018, because it would be on foreign soil. I suppose I could consider it or certainly not rule it out, but it's like the farthest thing from my mind. I want us to do a great U.S. Open, and I want to, you know, enjoy my time at Fox. We're going to do those four tournaments this year, the Women's U.S. Open, the Men's U.S. Open, the U.S. Amateur, and the Senior U.S. Open, and not necessarily in that order.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. This was a lot of fun. Obviously, excited about the U.S. Open. We've got it coming up. Oakmont, Fox, Fox Sports 1. Just leave your TV on those channels for Thursday through Sunday. But I appreciate you, Paul, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I've already enjoyed working with you and getting to know you, and it's only going to get better. So I appreciate you coming on.
You got it, Shane. I like it, too, and I can't wait to work together. It's this U.S. Open will be fun. We're going to have, you know, there's a lot of high-tech stuff coming. And I think the viewer is going to really have a good time watching golf.
Well, that'll do it. It's U.S. Open week. I don't care what your calendar says. Oakmont, baby, we are ready. Come back next week here to the clubhouse. If you really enjoy the podcast, make sure you write a review. Subscribe to it. Tell your friends. Tell your head pro. Tell anybody. I mean, I appreciate really anybody that wants to listen. You can write a review, as I said, on iTunes. It really helps us, boosts us up in the ratings. And we appreciate all the feedback we've got. If you have an email, send it to us at theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. You can follow us at theclubhousepod on Twitter, #clubhousesb for really any questions in the future. Sorry we didn't get to any of the questions. I'm focusing most of those on the mailbag there at foxsports.com. But it's going to be a really fun week. I am really, really fired up, as you can hear. I'm really excited about the team we have around this week. You're going to see a lot of new faces, a lot of familiar faces as well. So let's do it. You have a great weekend, and get ready, because it is Oakmont time.